Blog Talk Radio.
Of damage. We have to rebuild and learn from the mistakes of the past and move forward in a real reconstruction. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters of our esteemed listening audience, Critical Discourse, where we are dedicated to bringing to you the pointed intuitive point information, which aims to inspire you and have you inquire for practical information and feed your desire to assess the issues of the day from a critical eye and perspective. We do not aim to force our views on you, but desire healthy dialogue as we work to tackle the challenges and problems that are pandemic, peoples of African descent, as well as the Muslim community at large. This is indeed the show for thinking men and women, as we cover religion, politics, economic and social issues of the day, from, I'm sure you'll agree, a uniquely refreshing perspective. I just want to remind you that Saturday mornings at 5 a.m., we have a new day for Al-Islam on the radio, WPHT, 9:30 a.m. You also go there live, www.wpat930am.com. That's on your computer, obviously. Then on Mondays, 8 p.m., we have The Voice of Adam, sponsored by Match of Adam in the Bronx. Wednesday, 6:30 p.m., we have Mubashir Abtar through the language of Imam W. Mahab, also known as A Message of Concern. And on Fridays, we have Imam Yusuf Ramadan's Friday Jumu'ah lectures. I still have to find out if they're live. And another show, I believe, also. I think there's another show that's now on the. I'll ask William to give us the details on that one in a few minutes. I see he's on the board. I'm glad he's on the board. But those last three shows that I mentioned, including my show, you can listen to them live at the time that they air, or at your convenience, offline, off the air, I should say, on the archives. And you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Anudayfa'al-Islam. You hear that at your convenience anytime during the day, 24/7. And as always, we strive to work in a way which is most pleasing to our Lord, the Most High, as we understand that He is the author and evolver of spirituality, morality, culture, and all systems of knowledge on earth and beyond. So I'm your host, Brother Kwasi. Welcome again. Saturday morning, September 21st, 2013. Yes, this means summer is officially over. Now for the cold. Before I go into the topic or topics, the pervading topic being the funding, the GOP funding of the Affordable Care Act, which was signed by Barack Obama, President Obama, my goodness. Years ago. I forget, I believe it was last year, 2012. And should be going to work. No, I'm wrong. But I'll have to look that up. Forgive me for not knowing. The Supreme Court affirmed its right to go forward in June of 2012. I believe the Affordable Care Act was signed in 2009. Before I go into that, I want to direct our listeners. We're interested in Muslim TV. I went to Jumu'ah yesterday in Manhattan on Park Place, and the Imam gave a very, very good khutbah. And I want to discuss some things that he mentioned. One of them is a TV program called Guide Us TV. That's GUIDUS and TV. T and letter T. Okay, you can make donations, P.O. Box 3432, Little Ohio, 43016, phone number 202-436-9640. Donate online, www.donateforislam.com, DonateForIslam.com. And I understand that there's an app. A free app you can get on your iPad or your smartphone. Guide Us TV. I haven't launched yet, but if you're interested, Guide Us TV app on either your Android or your smartphone or your iPod or iPhone. iPad or iPhone. in light of the shootings in Chicago, I guess yesterday, the day before, and at Navy Yard, the issues of guns and violence comes up. But on another level, if you will, another story. Actually, I heard this at Jomar, and I want to look into this in the future, very near future. Apparently, a new Shahada will be going to the Masjid, you know, for orientation classes. There was some, I guess, severe differences between he and his mother, with whom he lived, and she, according to the brother, took it upon herself to call the police while he was not home, claiming that he was acting strange. So the police came. She handed the police one of his guns, which was illegal. And when he comes home, he had his other gun on him, legal also. But something happened in this, I guess, this interaction. And the brother ran, and the police shot him. As far as I know, I can ascertain he was killed. And this was back in May. And I'm trying to find out more about this case, because I want to talk to the imam on this show about this. Because to my shock, this pretty much can stay local. It does not go out nationally. You know, no one knew about this. You know, except, I guess, those who lived in that state, the city of North Carolina, South Carolina. And, you know, that was it. If, you know, and those who were at Juma yesterday heard about this. But I'd like to find out more about this. So I understand that it is, you mentioned something about an inquest. So apparently it is going to trial, or I'm assuming it is. I don't know. Does that mean that this is going to be an indictment or this is the process, the grand jury? I'm not sure. But this is what he told me. So we'll follow that story as best we can. Well, the GOP did it. A very contentious issue. Some have called it a civil war within the GOP. Because obviously there are those who feel that this is not the right move to make, but what I'm understanding, the Affordable Care Act, for the time being, has been shelved. Based on the GOP's budget, they presented, which defunded what we know as Obamacare. So the reaction that you would expect was quite swift, the pros and the cons. And let me go read some of these statements. So we'll start with Barack Obama. He referred to it, speaking at a Ford plant yesterday to, I guess, tout his role and the bounce back of the auto industry. He said that, quote, the GOP is trying to mess with me and not deal with you. Oh, meaning the American people. Speaker John Boehner called this a drift before the American people. And he referred to the Affordable Care Act as a train wreck. Minority leader Nancy Pelosi referred to it as a wolf in wolf's clothing. The vote was, I believe, was 228 to 130, with one Republican voting against the defund and two Democrats voting for the defund. So it was not quite a rock solid, you know, issue of partisanship in this regard. But either way, the fight goes on. The issue goes on with this Obamacare, as it's called. You know, we covered this back at the end of August, August 31st, obviously before the vote. Passing of the budget, which I understand really ensures that the government will be running, I guess, through December 15th. Or if there are those who, I guess, add some little gravy to it, that's suggesting that the GOP is willing to shut down the government. Of course, that's one perspective. But I want to hopefully get some understanding of what this all means. Was it a good thing to defund it? Is Obamacare a smart move? Will it help the people? Is the mandate that everybody buy insurance, buy medical insurance, is that wise? I mean, I would say probably the most significant part of this bill, this Affordable Care Act, is around the issue of pre-existing conditions. So time has passed for insurance, and I guess except you know through a job, you were never denied any type of coverage, any type of medical coverage. The feeling being, I guess, like similar to I guess life insurance. So if you have a disease, you might get life insurance. Actually, perhaps if you have some type of job, high risk job, you may get insurance. So the feeling being that when you look at their actuary tables, and charts, look at probabilities, they feel that you pretty much will use the use the insurance before a significant amount of your premiums are paid, and that's how insurance works. Which I guess is why some have argued. Some scholars have argued, questioned the halalness of insurance. But I've said enough for the time being. We have some people on the board. I want to recognize William first. He's been waiting here. He'll be traveling soon. William, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Yes. Just to let you know that I'm still experimenting with the broadcast of the Blog Talk program to bring Imam Ramadan on, and I find that it works best when I record the show, the Juma, and actually put it up. It's much more clear and concise. When I just record it live, it's kind of hollow, and it sounds like it's in a tunnel. So I'm, kind of working with it. Yeah, so it'll be up, but it will be up after the basic Juma right now. But we're working to, really make it better. And also for the hour before and the Thursday program also. Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to, upload those as programs. But I haven't figured out how to do that yet. They want everything to be live, and I haven't figured out how to upload it yet.
A Thursday program. Whose program is that on Thursdays?
What you're doing is we're taking the Saturday morning program and playing it over on Thursday.
Okay. That's the
on the Blog Talk Radio.
A little different hours.
Yeah.
Which airs live on Saturdays at 5:00.
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, like I said. Even though I set the time for it, I'm trying to upload it, and I haven't figured out how to do that yet. It's like I have to wait for the. Yeah, I'm gonna have to. That's the only thing I'm gonna figure it out.
Follow up.
What is
your sense of this funding of Obamacare, and what does it mean overall? To the common citizen.
Well, we've had this conversation a number of times. We had this conversation when it initially was supposed to be passed by Congress, and it winded up being passed by Congress and passed by the Senate. And then we had this conversation again when the Supreme Court got involved with it. And then we had the conversation again, during the presidential debate. I mean, we've had this conversation a number of times. And so we're having the conversation again where we're talking about this Obamacare thing. We really were supposed to be talking about funding the budget. That's what we were really supposed to be talking about. However, As you know, is the Obamacare has been linked to that, and so they decided, well, we're not going to fund it, but that would be against the law to do it. Now that I don't know
well,
what
Obamacare
is going
what
to
would
be
against the law because they did it. You know, I guess at the end of the day,
it's against the law.
Congress has the right to fund what it wants to fund.
Well, Obamacare is the law. I mean, you know, it's going to happen. Saying that they're not going to fund it is, it's a ploy. It's a ploy that they're doing. They're not hurting President Obama. They're hurting the American people, you know, to do that. And the way that I'm really perceiving it, they have no regard and respect for the black man that's in office, and they want to exert their authority over him. That's basically the way that I see it. I've tried to be very tactful regarding the situation, but, they continue to exert authority and be disrespectful to the office, not to the man, but to the office. That's the problem that I really have with them.
Well, see, it seems that you were saying something different a minute ago. It seems like you were focusing on the race of office holder rather than the office.
No. I have no choice but to focus on it like
you
that.
You implied that had it been a white man, that's by implication.
Well, if you look at these things, things historically, the budget has always been passed by all of the administrations except this one.
I beg to differ with that, and I don't think
passed. You're saying that the black Congressional Black Caucus always voted against stuff the white presidents brought.
No, I'm basically saying that I have no choice but to think that this is a racial thing because of the disregard and disrespect that they have shown to the office of the president of the United States. They voted on these things a number of times, but they keep on trying to kill it.
Poll, when you poll Americans, they say they don't want it.
Well, it's law.
It's like when Americans say they didn't want
it. It's a law. It's law. For you to say that America doesn't want it,
Obama wanted to go into Syria and Americans didn't, that's racism.
Pianchi,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's law. And I'm saying that the actions that I'm seeing, the Congress taking, I'm taking it as because historically these issues, especially the issue as far as the budget is concerned, have always been passed, but they're not passing it now, and I think because they're trying to exert their authority over the president, and the Congress is supposed to work with the president for the American people, and I don't see that.
Congress is supposed to work according to the wishes of American people.
Right.
We got it backwards.
I would tend to disagree with that perspective. That's why presidents lobby hard to get a both houses of Congress to be of the party, of his party, with the presumption that they will work with him because of a kindred spirit, of a similar ideology, as a president too. But again, I would say this much: I say, with the Congress, whether the Senate or the House, what they should do is be as objective as possible. But the fact remains, when Obamacare was passed in 2009, the majority of the House was Democrat, as was the Senate. And actually, if you listen to, the popular wisdom, the Obamacare was a fuel. Opposition to Obamacare was a fuel which brought in the majority in the House. Now, granted, they they pose challenges. The states did sue, and the United States Supreme Court did vote to uphold.
Well, the Supreme Court pulled a fast one. But you got 45% of the people when polled think it's a bad idea compared to a lesser now. And it's the people that's telling their representative that they don't want it. Roberts ruled on it, Roberts was supposed to rule whether or not it was it could come under the Commerce Clause. He said no, but then he said it could be a tax. That was a slick one. You see, Roberts can do that because he can't be elected.
I was tend to think because of that language, because he heard with the tax, it kind of adds fuel to the opposition. Because again, it begs the question in my mind. At the end of the day, what is it going to cost the average person? Will it cost them more out of their pocket or less?
It's costing a lot of people more.
Well, I think we'll have to find out. We don't really know. That's the future.
It's already happening.
That the law has been laid, let's let it play out to find out how it works.
I think at the end of the day, because I think it comes into effect October 1st, and I think at the end of the day, what I'm understanding, has to go through the Senate. And the Senate is majority Democrat. So presumably it would pass. The defund efforts will not last. But I want to bring on Ahmed right now, because he's waiting. Assalamu alaikum, Ahmed. Assalamu alaikum. Oh, he's probably on mute right now. So.
Walaikum salam.
Oh, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good. How I keep my phone on mute.
Yeah, I know.
I think that maybe William has said it best. It's, in my opinion, unless they made another argument, which they're not doing, that this is a result of a sentiment towards the president. Obviously, no one has said it is racial, but I wouldn't argue it isn't. If we can afford this or not, that would be my argument if I was in the position to know. But the real issue here is that the way this is going and linking this to shutting down the government and all the other little shenanigans is nothing more than plain old unadulterated racism, which people don't want to believe it exists. Not talking about our listeners or people on this show. But they don't want to believe it exists, and it does on different levels. And this is just one of them.
So what's being suggested there, therefore, that if a white president was to propose the same law, the same act, he'd be unopposed by the GOP.
I think he would be opposed for a different reason. I think they would say we can't afford it. My position on it is this, and I'm going to lay it out there. It's like me giving Seneca or anything else to someone outside of my immediate family or extended family or a friend or whatever. If I have it, I'll do it. And if I don't have it, I can't do it. And personally, I don't think that the government is in a position to do it. Now, I will say that it will certainly help the country because we are de facto funding Obamacare. Because anyone who has medical benefits or supplies them, you're paying for the uninsured. It's like paying for the driver that's uninsured. We're all paying for the uninsured driver.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the law allows insurance companies to charge all of us a little surcharge to pay for the driver who's uninsured, and we're paying for the people who are uninsured, whether it's in those rates or hospital rates. Look at the hospital. You're in the hospital and you get an aspirin, it costs you $50. Get out of here. It's like, that's ridiculous. So all I'm saying is it has a good concept. I don't have a problem with it. But I have a problem with having to pay for it.
But that's kind of like a backdoor excuse because you don't have to drive.
Well,
right?
Yes, I do. To make a living, I have
now,
to drive.
No, people don't have to drive. They can. That's why they got public transportation.
Well, no, not in New Jersey here.
I'm not talking about you specifically, but people don't have to drive. If you don't want to pay gasoline taxes, don't drive. Ride the bus. And that's what we talk about, direct and indirect taxes. So he wants to pose a direct tax, which, by the way, was unconstitutional for a long time here in this country. Direct taxes was unconstitutional. You should have supposed to have the ability to either participate or not participate, to associate or not to associate. And what he's done is making people be a part of something that they don't want to be.
Well, let me ask you a question on that note. And I think which could come up on that issue, Social Security. What if I decided I did not want to pay into Social Security and not receive Social Security when I turn 65? I'm taking a chance. You know, I'm saying I don't want any part of it. I want to put into it, right? But I think one reason why they have
get a civil service job. Civil service employees don't pay Social Security.
Well, I think all
post office people didn't pay for Social Security.
They do now.
Well,
they do now. The civil servants that were in before 1983 don't pay Social Security,
Social Security you're supposed to get back. I mean, it's not paying something that you don't never get back. That's the difference here. We use these excuses.
Right.
You get Social Security back, you're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what still kind of confuses me about this. This Obamacare, as it's called. Okay, I can tell you from my own observation, one way it benefited me was that I was able to, not right now. You know, your children who are not in college full time can get medical coverage, medical insurance. Because, the old formula, at least most companies, was that unless your child was a full-time student, they were not covered. So I have to say, but yet at the same time, I recognize that I'm still paying for it. You know, so it's not a free ride. So I do appreciate that advantage. I have to be honest.
What is very really disrespectful about this Obamacare thing is that it has jumped through a lot of hoops, and it has passed the test. There are people who disagree with it, but it passed. I mean, so why not just let it go? They won't let it go.
I'm reading the article here. Where it says the Cleveland Clinic to reduce budget by $330 million due to Obamacare. Layoff inevitable.
We don't know that. See, that's just a projection, number one.
This was last week. They have laid off the people.
William, it's not projection. You know, I did see the article. I didn't get a chance to read about it. I will bring it up right now 7:03 Eastern Time. Before 8:15, I'll bring the article up and try to make some sense.
The point I was basically trying to make was that the way that the three places of government have always acted is once the rules and regulations and the laws have been passed, they've gone on and moved on to other things. There are many other things that we really have to deal with, and they continue to hop on. It's Obamacare.
At the same time, we did have a Dred Scott decision. Okay? Yes, providence and common decency dictated it should not.
Right. White congressmen said that wasn't right, and they created the 14th Amendment. Was that racist for some and racist for not others?
And I'll tell you something, one of the points that Attorney Automatics always makes, he takes a position that is a pervasive standing law to stress that decision. I think think a black man has a right to respect.
How long did it take before the Dred Scott decision was overturned?
Not overturned. It wasn't overturned. But no, I'm just making a point about the. And again, I have to say this. You know, I will say this. While the late Robert Bork, when he was up for confirmation, I believe appointed by Ronald Reagan, 86, I believe, he made a point that has always made me think. It's always made me think. And that is the role of a Supreme Court decision. He said, is it legislative or judicial? All right? So we see, for example, going off topic a little bit, with the death penalty. You know, the Supreme Court ruled the one time that the death penalty was cruel and unusual punishment. I believe in 73. All right? Yet, at some point, states did reinstate death penalty. I think what ends up happening is that Supreme Court decisions tend to have a certain type of weight. They have an implied weight, an implied obligation, whereby states, counties will tend to follow suit based on the Supreme Court decision.
Look at Brown versus the board. 30,000 blacks lost jobs, administrator jobs, superintendents, principals, teachers, and they still have not overcame. I mean, that impact of 30,000 blacks, and some people say more than that, lost jobs because they was fired from their job when the Brown versus the board came into existence because people voted by their feet. They went elsewhere.
Okay. Well, so they went to integrate with the schools. Well, again, what you presented here just now, Bianchi, is I never knew this. It's a little known. What I did learn from Virginia, and I think I mentioned it before. It must be the Long Island Railroad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Long Island Railroad. That's okay. It shows us with this is a real world. We're real people. We're real lives. I have no problem with that. Anyhow, what you said to me was that a number of black people actually rebelled against this and refused to send their children to white schools and started church schools, their own private church schools. But I think again,
we had it here in St. Louis just this school season when blacks. Refused to send their children out to this other county, white school district, and they opted to take their children down in the city to a particular school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is their right. But again, I think what happens there, if you look at the, I'm going to say that an interpretation, a reaction to the Brown v. Board of Education, I guess, what did they say, with all the liberties, integrated schools, if I'm not mistaken, was the language?
And they're still not integrated.
Well,
and rightfully so.
I'll say this much here now. I think at the end of the day, what the Supreme Court did aver was that one had a right to go to a school of the parent's choice. I'm talking about elementary school, obviously. It was not a child when I make the decision.
Well, that's not true, neither, Kwasi, because you had cases where, you know what changed it? Roberts changed it. When this white girl could not go to the school in her own neighborhood, she had to walk by her school to go to another school. And in the Roberts Court, Roberts made a decision that went against, busing. Black kids forever had been walking by these schools and had to be bused out to someplace else. See, we always use black children for these experiments.
Well, I tell you, you mentioned that, and I'm thinking, I don't know if she met at this level, but if you remember last week, we had Charlotte Isabey, who spoke about the dumbing down of American education, and she did state that experiments tend to be conducted on black people, on black children first, So I just find it interesting that you made that observation, but again, when I be clear, in as much as I have been a critic of Barack Obama and rightfully so. I do have to recognize that you have some explanation because he's a black man. I think that should be understood by Republicans and Democrats. So let's not get this confused. Oh, just the GOP, just the GOP. No, that's an issue I think any black executive has to deal with, chief executive has to deal with. But that being said, I think that the people have a right, if they have in their conscience, have an issue with or against or with a particular proposal, or they're for it. I think they have an obligation and right to be able to express that. And again, for me, and I say the problem I may have with the GOP, position. Speaker Boehner referred to Obamacare as a train wreck. Again, not knowing it infinitely, the Affordable Care Act, it is difficult for me to ascertain the correctness of that statement. Actually, if it represents a economic train wreck. I think there is an issue whereby you require everybody to buy insurance. Which I understand is a provision of Obamacare.
And those who got insurance, if they're paying for a very, very good lucrative insurance plan, the Obama administration wants to tax that plan. I mean, it's just like when you if you sell your house, and of course it appreciates under normal circumstances. Well, the difference between your appreciation, I mean, what you pay for, what you now can sell it for, they want to tax that. Democrats want to tax every damn thing. Tax.
Isn't that a capital gains tax? I thought that was. It's not capital gains. The equity that you have.
Long term capital gains and short term capital gains should be taxed just as reasonable income tax. Why should it have a higher tax rate than reasonable income tax?
I have problems with Obamacare myself, but that's not the problem that I'm looking at. The problem that I see is that, again, like I said, Obamacare is just one issue. We got so many doggone issues that these people continue to hop on that and not, start working on some of the other problems that we have.
Well, what you have to realize also, the difference, William, is that a budget was presented, all right, a budget for the fiscal year, and the GOP, majority GOP, it was actually one representative voted against defunding. That was Scott Rigel of Virginia.
He needed to be recalled.
Well, they did
those two out in Colorado. They recalled two representatives in Colorado.
That was a state issue, though. And two Democrats voted for it. Mike McIntyre of North Carolina and Jim Masterson of Utah, who, by the way, recently beat Maya Love, upcoming Haitian American black woman conservative, who was eviscerated by the racists, who hated the fact that a black woman was a conservative. Yes, I say that. The racists, who believe that black people must be liberals, must be Democrats.
Hell, Star Parker was at a black university, and the students got up in the stands, stood up and turned their back to her. Black students.
Yeah, well,
This woman is an excellent person. Came out of poverty, sleeping in cars.
But
she's a Republican, they turn their back on. That goes to show you the mentality of some people.
Well, it goes back to my point. I want people to be as objective as possible. And what I see with our people is that we look at the Democratic Party in religious terms almost. We look at them as religion. And yes, I say the God of the Democratic Party for black people today is Barack Obama. That's it. I say it now. If 8340, caller, I believe there's five to you, but if you want to holler, holler, please. 8340. Anyhow, I did want to talk also about Bill Clinton. Because Bill Clinton gave a highly anticipated speech at his own presidential library in Little Rock, Arkansas, where he was going to simplify, for the benefit of the citizen, the Obamacare, what it means, what it doesn't mean. I think it's recognized, and again, I don't want to put this on Obama solely because it is not understood, because I think, truth be told, many bills that we read, many laws are not understood, okay? So this is not the cat's burden on Obama. I think that these bills written by lawyers, drafted by lawyers, and they speak at a different level. I think the vocabulary and, how the phraseology speaks to a long-term view and attempts to cover all bases in a way that most people just can't understand or appreciate. So this is not to cast aspersion on Obama, if you can understand it. But I think we should try to understand it. We need to raise our literacy. I mean, it's 2,000-plus page bill, a lot of reading. I tell you, and the reason, and this brings back the show I did about a month or so ago about the Supreme Court decision of the Voting Rights Act, which, by the way, William, by the way, since you made the point about respecting the Supreme Court decisions, despite the Shelby County versus Holder, you heard some grumblings from the Obama administration that they want to somehow bypass that. Okay. I think when you have a position, you have a certain passion, people tend to not give up. Now, granted, I have heard not much since then. They decided that and I would say that the Department of Justice has an obligation to monitor any type of voting policies, which will clearly be proven to be discriminatory against black people. So I think they're going to do it anyhow. But what I want to just highlight when we were reviewing this, we looked at the Voter Rights Act of 55, in fact. And what I found people were focused on, I think, sections 4 and 5. But there was a paragraph, which the way I read it, stated that you have to be in sixth grade in order to vote. That's how I read it. So all this concern about disenfranchisement and literacy tests, which the bill did kind of speak about in its language, yet the full provision that the presumption was that you reach the sixth grade in order to be able to vote. And no one dealt with that. I just happened to read it that morning during the show. I'm saying that it speaks to, in general, the need to be more informed. If you have to get a bunch of folks together and just go through the bill, you better understand it, so be it. But in the day...
Well, that's one of the issues with the Tea Party. The Tea Party speaks about the dubious bills that's being passed. And everybody says that the Tea Party is evil. Look at the agenda that they have. They have excellent points in their agenda.
Oh, and I think so too. But again, when I did the show on the Arizona illegal immigration bill, I asked some of the callers, read the bill, please, read the bill. No one read it. 17-page bill. 17 pages. Right? No one read it. And I found most people I knew who had an opinion on this bill never read it. But they depended on MSNBC or Fox News or CNN. And this is a 17-page bill. So imagine a bill of the magnitude of 2,000 pages. Now, I did a show on the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act. Okay, there's a lot of clamor about somehow this was a precursor to detaining Americans, all right, for a trial. Now, to be honest with you, what I read of that bill, I couldn't find it. It would be modification. I couldn't find that language. But yet, it seems to be a conventional wisdom that this bill gives the president the sweeping powers. What can I say? You know? But I wanted to, you know, all that to, you know, read this article from the Politico. This was back September 4th. Former President Bill Clinton, recruited by the White House to explain the misunderstood health law, is looking to play Obamacare peacemaker. In a highly anticipated speech from his presidential library, Clinton challenged Republicans to finally work with Democrats to improve on President Barack Obama's signature domestic achievement instead of constantly trying to undermine it. We all get paid to show up for work. I went to my Clinton invitation. And we need all hands on deck here, Clinton said in an hour-long speech Wednesday, just weeks before millions start signing up for the law's new insurance coverage. Clinton gave a well-received speech clearly explaining the complicated law at the Democratic National Convention last summer, and the Obama administration invited him to make another attempt at cutting through the confusion just weeks before Americans can by signing up for the law's new insurance coverage. But in his Little House speech, he delved into detail, discussing everything from accountable care organizations in Western Pennsylvania to how the health care encourages doctors to wash their hands. Watch me that. I thought that was a given. Spoke about the laws in ways that Obama could not. He called out specific problems with complex legislation and held up his native Arkansas as a model of bipartisan Obamacare compromise. Clinton called for bipartisanship going forward about a month after Obama scolded the Republicans for making repeal their holy grail. As Republicans prepare to return to Congress next week, ready to resume their push for defunding. And by the way, Obama also called tax increases the Republicans' holy grail. I have called Obama's domestic social programs his holy grail. Which they are. Let me continue. Clinton's speech is at the forefront of the administration's larger effort to deploy a campaign-style operation to meet its self-imposed goal of signing up 7 million people on new health insurance marketplaces in the first open enrollment period, starting October 1st and lasting through March. Expect to start seeing the Obamas and Bidens popping up around the country over the next 6 months and more big-name celebrities attaching their name to the health care law. The former president called Republicans for voting to repeal the law 40 times but failing to come up with new real solutions. And he outlined in wonky detail how the lesser-known provisions of the law could tamp down health costs while improving Americans' access to care. I want to get some of that in the Clinton speech, but it was peppered with enough specifics and peppered with enough elementary discussions that I think most people could get clean the message pretty easily, Arkansas Democratic Governor Mike Beebe told Politico. I thought he struck the right tone, informative and informative in a way that Clinton's known for, where it's understandable. I'll stop there. I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to ask Bianchi, I'm going to ask Ahmed, I'm going to ask William, and whoever's at 8340. Do you understand Obamacare? And in that, why is Obamacare overall of a benefit and not a detriment?
No, I don't understand Obamacare. I don't understand all of Obamacare. What I do understand, first of all, I don't need Obamacare because I have my own health insurance, okay? If it's going to be for someone, it'll probably be for somebody else. But I don't. There's a lot to understand as far as Obamacare is concerned. We depend on people to put that program together. And they've made decisions as far as that program is concerned. And my position is that the only way to find out if it works or not is to let it move forward.
So if you were to find out that it was a complete disaster, raise costs, clinics are closing, what would your position then be? Would you then suggest that maybe the GOP was on to something and in hindsight they were correct? Would you say that?
Well, Nate, of course I would have to say that, but The only way that we're going to find out is to have it move forward. I'm sure that there's going to have to be some adjustments to it. But, I mean, there are many other problems that we really need to deal with. You know, what I really found that was interest. Well, I'm not going to go any further because you want some answers from some other people.
And, again, I this particular article, the headline, Bill Clinton calls for GOP to improve, not repeal Obamacare. And I think on the surface that is fair. Because, you know, again, there's always this issue about uninsured Americans not getting care and dying or getting sicker. And I think there's we should have the compassion for.
How are you going to have compassion when you in Ohio and your private insurance is increasing 41%?
Well,
how are you going to have compassion when you in Florida, your private insurance is increasing 35%?
Bill Clinton is out of his mind,
just like he wants to equate civil rights, the Common Core, with civil rights.
Well, I tell you something, you know, and again, you know, I'm going back to last week with Charlotte Disabee, you know, she's very much against Common Core. My wife is going to a meeting; she's there now at Boys and Girls High to discuss implications of Common Core. Right. I know we had Dr. Wilson on last year, Dr. Bonnie Wilson, my college classmate, and obviously as school principal, you know, he's preparing to, you know, implement it in the Reginald Lewis School, a high school in Baltimore, Maryland. I've not done enough of the research as I should have, Common Core. But again, these things I think we should discuss. I would say what I did find interesting in Charlotte's presentation, which I said I still have some differences on that along that level, is you know, our ability or our right to get vouchers, if we, you know, choose to have a home school or a parochial school. She felt that this is a precursor for controlling the agenda and controlling the school, you know, and you're better off just, you know, find alternative means of funding. So my feeling is that if the children are going, if they were going to public school, the money that you're paying in taxes, go your child there. So why not to my child in an environment that I have more control over? But it's an issue that I think we should elaborate and discuss at some point. But I think it speaks to this divide. I mean, right now, you know, we are in an ideological divide in this country. Probably the most intense in my lifetime. Dealing with, you know, religious issues, spiritual issues, social issues, you know, and I know that for the most part, Obama's on the wrong side. Plain and simple. And I say unabashedly. Okay?
Yeah.
But again, I'll tell you.
In Indiana, the increase is going to be like 72%.
Well, then, on that, taking those statistics, taking that information, who's benefiting from Obamacare?
But Bianchi, you know, this is not the first time, I'm sure, that you've been in a situation where something has increased and you could no longer afford it. What do you do in a situation like that?
You should have the options to not take it at all.
Yeah, but
when automobile insurance became mandatory and people couldn't pay for it, they stopped driving.
Exactly.
But with this thing here, if you decide to do that, they're going to penalize you.
Well, you're right about that, too.
That's the thing that people don't like. Americans want to have the ability to do or not to do.
Right.
They don't want to be forced into doing something.
I agree.
Well, I tell you something.
Yeah, I don't like that part.
Well, and see, you know, if I'm taking Bill Clinton, you know, based on this headline, at his word, maybe the GOP should have been encouraged to tweak the Obamacare and remove that provision of requirement, absolute requirement to buy insurance. All right? But again, I have to be honest with you. Me, I personally, the benefit for me is that, you know, my children who are not full-time in school are covered through age 26. So I will call it a benefit, an advantage for me on that regard. But
my health insurance went up over 150% within 5 years. And in particular, under the George W. Bush administration, it really skyrocketed. There was a medical cost. It was a federal employee's health insurance plan. I was paying $75 a month, and then it went up to $143, and then next thing you know, I was paying over $300 and some odd for the family plan. I had to drop it and get another plan.
Welcome to the real world. My insurance.
But the real world?
You know, another thing. Let me tell you something.
The created
forever.
World.
No, if you lived, you could not buy insurance across states. That was another thing which was wrong. I remember a time you could have two or three insurance policies and would hardly pay nothing for them, and each one would pay off for the same procedure. You would actually put money in your pocket from that. But they cut that stuff out. What do they call it? Coordination of benefits, I think was the term they've done away with.
I think in all fairness, I don't think you should be getting paid.
If you pay for the insurance, yes. You're paying for the insurance. If a policy pays you, I mean, if you're paying for a policy and you're paying for to be insured, then they should pay off.
Yeah, but again, the insurance should be paying for my procedure, my medical or health procedure, not giving me an income.
No, if you buy for a policy, say we will pay this amount for this procedure. If it costs more than that, it comes out of your pocket. That's why people would have two insurance policies. If you had a procedure that cost $5,000 and the insurance policy that you could afford would only pay $4,500, well, you had to buy another policy or come up with $500 out of your pocket. It was cheaper to do another policy that would pay another $4,500.
Can I ask a question?
This is the question.
How is it that insurance, how did it get out of control? Did the hospitals start charging too much money? Was it the insurance companies that did it? Was it the doctors? How did it get out of control?
Well, I think one of the factors, and again, this is an anecdotal position. I don't know, you know, from a standpoint of analysis, anything empirical. I think a key factor was malpractice insurance. Now, and I think, you know, Bush tried to address that with tort reform.
Well, that happened way before Bush. Bush probably wasn't even born.
No, but my point though, he tried to address that aspect of the malpractice insurance, you know, tort reform, because as he argued that if you don't have some type of a cap on, you know what one can sue, you know,
malpractice. That came into play.
That will increase medical costs, no question about it. I mean, you figure, okay.
But you had to pay for the people who were uninsured, and I don't know the percentages of each one of those two categories that affect the pricing.
Let me ask you now. If that's the case, Oscar, why do we need Obamacare then? If we're paying for the uninsured already, then what is I'm hearing that the uninsured are dying because they have no way of paying for it with medical care?
And hospitals are granted tax-exempt status. They don't have to. I mean, that's where it works out. You know, I forget what the sum is, $300 million or something that hospitals here in St. Louis profited because they don't have to pay taxes because they provide free service.
Well, I want to hear.
And you know, another thing, young people never did buy insurance because they didn't get sick back in them days.
That's right.
Well, Well, it's a whole
other issue.
Well, that's a whole other issue. You know, you had the doctor make the house call. Because, Osmond, did you go to Dr. Thomas when you were growing up?
Yes, I did.
Boy Thomas? Yeah, with the same doctor, right there in Lincoln Place between New York and Nostrand. A lot of my friends went to Dr. Thomas, you know?
Yeah, but we didn't go to the doctor for every little thing.
Well,
today's
okay,
kids go to the doctor for anything, STDs, yeast infections and all that crazy stuff.
Two things to consider now. And again, I think this is one of the, I hear, one of the issues with I guess, the European nations and Canada, socialized medicine. Because it's paid for, you know, through sales taxes, there's a backlog of people who are going to the doctor where normally it wouldn't have gone. So that, you know, they kind of gone overboard. You have that backlog. So in a sense, you have somewhat of the same situation where people are not getting the quality of the care. So you have like a plethora of people going for I guess what was going to be minor issues. You know, but again, I think that you know, you've heard of people, you've seen people, you know, who are ailing, and I've heard of people who have lost their life savings because they've had to pay for a procedure.
Well, I don't know what the government politicians use that excuse for, because if people leave a life savings, they want to tax it in inheritance taxes and death taxes.
Yeah, but the difference is, though, I mean, this is a very quick, you know, as Morphrow said, the sucking sound. All that money.
Listen to all these excuses they come up with. Now, when the hell have they been considerable about somebody losing their life savings due to medical? They're not being considerable of, they're being jealous. Because, as I said, if that person die and leave that money in the bank, the federal government wants to take 50% of it. The states want to take another 35 to 40. You don't have anything left to leave your kids.
Well, I found a very interesting site yesterday. Healthcarereformprocon.org. And there are, I guess, 10 points. With, I guess, some type of level of detail and, I guess, documentation, frames of reference, as to why Obamacare is good or is bad. And I actually quote people, you know, quote notables, you know, who take the position. I'm going to read number one. Keeping insurance coverage. Pro. This is a quote by Barack Obama at the annual meeting of the American Medical Association. I quote, "No matter how you form health care, we will keep this promise. If you like your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan, period. No one will take it away, no matter what. My view is that health care reform should be guided by a simple principle. Fix what's broken and build on what's worked." Now, the con. This is John Boehner, at the time the minority leader of the United States House of Representatives, Republican from Ohio. Right, Obamacare, 3 months of broken promises. Right? According to experts, more than 87 million Americans could lose access to their current health care plan under the new law. Workers at a majority of the nation's employers, including as many as 4 out of 5 small businesses, will lose their current coverage, thus providing further evidence that Obamacare is doing exactly the opposite of what Democrats promised it would do. So we have two different, very diverse views. And I would have to concede what William said. See what happens after it goes into effect. I don't know enough in the language to say A and A to that point. You know, I would have, you know, and to be frank with you, is that a big issue about the doctor, you know, one has? I mean, one has, people have their own personal positions. I don't know how Obamacare would affect it either way. You know, I don't know. I mean, this is, and again, I want to look up that, I'm going to go to that webpage in a few minutes about the clinic and clinic that had to close down because of Obamacare. You've heard people know that the small businesses would be affected negatively by Obamacare. Now, I'm going to read point two. Quality of care improvements, as we are now 7:39 on the AM. 20 minutes before the hour, top of the hour. Okay, quality of care improvements. Pro, patient care on the Medicaid, Medicare will improve as pilot programs to improve efficiencies are implemented. Doctors and hospitals are encouraged to coordinate care through payment incentives. For the first time, Medicare will reward quality, not quantity. Thus, bonus payments will be given to those doctors and hospitals that provide quality care. This is the Alliance for Retired Americans, ARA, Medicare Benefits and Changes, April 2010. It's a con in this case regarding quality of health care. Our care will suffer. Democrats' plans come law, fewer than 700,000 physicians will be available to treat a patient population growing in size, 18 years, studying medical education, and receiving free health, quote-unquote free health care, or insurance coverage from the government in increasing numbers. Result will be longer waits to see a doctor and a decline in the high quality of care Americans are accustomed to as overworked physicians try to keep it up. This is Investors Business Daily, the doctor shortage, www.investors.com, March 2010. You know, we have a clash, I've been dispersed 2 points, and I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. To be frank with you.
Obama wants to, here we want to go raising the debt ceiling again.
Well, that's, you know, I find it interesting because, the previous president, Bush, was blamed for, the country having such a large national debt, a large deficit, I guess, of $1 trillion. And Obama, who was supposed to be the anti-Bush, asked for the same things that Bush got. You know, and obviously, you know, if you raise the debt ceiling, you raise the potential for more spending and more debt, more deficit. So when I hear was just raising the ceiling, it's not really increasing in cost, so of course, more, you know, I have to wonder about what's making that statement.
What I found interesting in his speech that he said he wanted to raise the debt ceiling, but he said that he was bringing down the deficit in half. I didn't understand that.
Well, I guess what he's trying to say that, you know, I want that safety net. But in the meantime, always maybe what he's trying to say that even the money that I spend will be so well invested that in the long run it'll bring down, you know, I'm guessing what he's saying that, I suppose.
According to projections, the national debt is going to be way over. It's going to be over $20 trillion in another 3 years. Right now, it's $17 trillion. Per citizen, each U.S. citizen owes approximately $63,000. And people say, "Well, raise it." Well, how willing are you to pay? And the ones that are saying that don't have $63,000 to contribute toward paying off the debt. If people want to get rid of the debt, it's everybody kick up $63,000. Then the debt goes away.
But if he said that the debt has already been cut in half, how is it that, so you're saying that if we was at $30 trillion?
I don't know what he's saying.
I think he said
he's probably talking about the deficit. The deficit is where they spend more money than they take in between October the 1st and September the 30th of the following year.
Well, was this Monday or Tuesday? A man entered the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. He bought a rifle. He got a rifle from the facility. Started firing, shooting. After the dust settled, 13 people dead, including the 34-year-old Navy reservist. No, I'm sorry. Not Saturday. I'm sorry. Including the, yeah, I think it was the Navy Reservist. Aaron Alexis. 13 killed, he being one of them. Obviously in this, we bring up issues of gun control, background checks with regard to that, and mental illness.
He had them all. He had a legal gun, too, shotgun.
And, you know, again, my understanding is that with the Brady Bill, background checks are required. All right? So I get confused when I hear this provision for universal background check. You know, we speak about the supposed gun show loophole, but I'm informed by a friend who hunts, has guns, goes to gun show, that at the gun show, you still have to go through the background check before you purchase. Obviously, you can't control somebody who's stolen a gun from the, you know, from the in the parking lot or, you know, across the street. You can't control that person. But in an organized, legal gun show, there's a background check.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. Where do these background checks start and stop? If you got a bad credit score, do they deny you from owning the gun? They deny you from doing everything else just about if you got a bad credit score. You can't get a job. Hell, you can't buy car insurance. You can't even get medical insurance in some cases.
Okay, now, on that last note. How would Obamacare address that issue of a person with bad credit? Will they be denied medical insurance?
They don't care because they're gonna make you pay and when you file your taxes, they're gonna charge you a fee, or should I say, a tax for not having it. They don't care why you don't have it. They just gonna charge you a tax.
Because again, what confuses me though, in that one point there, if one is not working, presumably they can't afford to buy insurance. So why are they penalized? Even though I've read that sometimes it's simply not working. Man.
They don't care. They'll take it out of your Social Security when time comes.
Wow.
The gentleman, not to leave the gun issue alone. First of all, there was no way to stop this one through any legal means. To make stiffer gun laws, I mean, they wouldn't stop this one. Now, that's my main point. If you want to say that now people at gun shows are going to get background checks and there'll be some national registry, they don't want a national registry. Because there are certain people that don't want their information out there in that national registry, because that's really the holdup. As far as
here
the national,
here in Missouri, they gave away the information on all concealed carries to some agency. The state legislature had to come back and pass a law saying you're not supposed to do that.
Well,
but I think it's a tragedy. I don't think we can prevent what happened that day. Because everybody around him, you know, there were guns there. They're saying that the police at the location, the military police, were understaffed that day, and they did not have adequate people to address the issue. Maybe that would have helped, but... You know, that day.
And what about the argument by large clip magazines? He had a shotgun. The most number of shells you can load in a shotgun is 3. And he killed 13 people. Unless you take the plug out, you can put 5 in there.
Mm-hmm.
And what shot did he have? 20?
That I'm not aware of.
Or 12? Or did he have rifle slugs?
I think what ended up happening was... people like Dianne Feinstein jumped, and I think Matt Lupica here in New York, a columnist for the Daily News, jumped on the bandwagon about the AR-15 being a weapon to use. And this is a weapon for the battlefield, not for the streets. But I do believe, I think in Chicago, right? Chicago recently, last few days ago, the open fire, the park, was 13 people wounded. Let me read this over here. Okay, this was from the CBS News.
You had another report that said that the shooter had obtained the ID of an African American.
Which shooter? Shooter where? In Chicago?
In D.C.
I'm lost now. I'm sorry, but he was African American, though. I'm lost.
Now listen. When the news came out, it said that a shooter. It's reported that the shooter got in by obtaining the ID of an African American.
Oh, okay, I got you. I didn't hear that. Okay, but let me read this about the Chicago situation as we are minutes away from the top of the hour. For those listening, you can call in 213-816-0356.
Yeah, I got to get ready to cut out, man.
Okay, those behind a late-night attack at a Southwest Chicago park, which 13 people were wounded, including a three-year-old, used an assault-style weapon to spray the crowd with bullets, making it a miracle no one was killed, the city's police commissioner superintendent said Friday. Ballistics evidence shows that those behind Thursday night's attack used a 7.62-millimeter rifle fed by a high-capacity magazine, police superintendent Gary McCarthy told reporters. That type of weapon, he said, belongs on the battlefield, yeah, not out in the street or a corner or a park in the back of the yard, neighborhood where the shooting took place. It's a miracle in existence that there will have no fatalities based upon the lethality of the weapon used at the scene, McCarthy said, calling on lawmakers to restrict the sale of such weapons and choke off the flow of illegal guns into the city. Well, that's a no-brainer, the last point. In total, 19 people were shot citywide Thursday, leaving one dead and 18 others hurt, the police said. Chicago has some problems. Not the first time they've had, like, a weekend of a lot of shootings and carnage. But this issue of mental illness is an issue, in my view, that we have to tackle and deal with. Now, we have to learn not only to cope with family members and loved ones who have this. Sure, we have to work. Sure, we have to work on a proper nutritional regimen, do the best we can to possibly avoid those psychotropic drugs, but sometimes it makes the problem worse. When I heard the national crisis, it's not a very common name to me. I haven't known many people that know that name.
I particularly do because there was a player named Wendell Alexis out of Brooklyn. So that last name is a fairly common Caribbean last name.
Oh,
Alexis.
Okay. Oh, interesting, because I happen to know
that
Caribbeans for that last name.
Yeah, that's pretty common because, generally speaking, people from the Caribbean have two first names. In other words, my last name is Noel. That's not a surname outside of Carriacou and maybe Haiti.
Right, of course, yeah, right. French speaking now, yes, right.
So that's how you generally pick it up. And when his last name was Alexis and the mother is from Brooklyn, and he was from Brooklyn, that's when I knew he's probably of some Caribbean ancestry.
Yeah, right. Once you first cross over, from Brooklyn. Oh, man. And, you know, you have to wonder about this post-traumatic stress that some soldiers have gone through.
Well,
war.
He had some of that. Yes, he had some issues.
Wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, I think we're seeing it. There's definitely a cost.
One of my biggest arguments with everyone who thinks we win these wars and there's no competition and we beat the whole world is if you look at the post-war casualties that America has, the score's a little closer than you might think.
Well, I'd be curious to know. We know about the Vietnam vets and some of the challenges they went through, the trauma they went through, Vietnam vets. I've heard World War II vets. Type of trauma. I mean, do you think this is exclusive to American soldiers? Do you think? I'll make this position. In the Holy Quran, it speaks of the angels being told to bow to Adam. And one of the things they told God is that he's going to be a shedder of blood. He's going to shed blood. Okay? But God said, I know what you don't know. So my point being is that, you know, even though we see there have been countless wars and carnage and fighting, the idea of taking a human life is something that's really repugnant to human nature. You know? And there has to be some type of course, the psyche to the soul.
Yeah, but what are you fighting for? I think will be.
Well, I'm getting to that next. Even more.
We
should
have played a bunch of lies to our players.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Our
even,
soldiers.
Even more so compounded when that cause is not for true justice. Because I will tell you that even though obviously times will come where you have to defend life, country, family. I've never been in a situation where I've had to kill anybody to defend myself and my family. But I can't imagine if I were in that situation, I'd be the same. I can't imagine I would, you know, wouldn't affect me somewhat. You know, that, I mean, you figure when you halal an animal, there's certain steps, if you will, to keep you in a mind of sensitivity to life, to a life. I'm saying that even on a human level, there's something there in our makeup of nature. Some of us just outright cold, wicked devil who have no type of remorse at all. No type of remorse. They're just cold-blooded, like reptile. But I think the essence of human nature speaks to that. So who knows what Aaron Lecter saw. He was, I'm assuming he saw active combat. But obviously the man had a breakdown, as did Major Lee Dow at Fort Hood. Now, those who, I guess, will argue that his was more of an ideological action by being a Muslim.
They made all types of statements about why he did it, because he was Muslim and he was also of foreign ancestry. He may have been born in his native country and came as a young child. But the point of the matter is there was a lot of psychological problems going on, and we can't deal with that so easily with all these guns all over the place.
Okay. And then you have Aaron Alexis, okay, who was a Buddhist.
Yes, nobody brought that up. I mean, obviously, if he's Muslim,
yeah,
been
first. And
case,
I'm not using this to cast aspersion on Buddhism, but
right.
You know, the image we have of Buddhism, is one of, I guess, sublime, peace, peace, and extra. Restraint, hold them back until the last possible minute to fight back. That's the image you have of Buddhism. Okay? And what's that Buddhism?
You're starting to break up.
Let me see. Yeah. I know. Any better? Hello? Any
yes,
better?
Much better. Yes,
okay.
Much better.
What's that statement, I guess, attributed to Buddhism? It's wound, okay, wound rather than scratch, scratch rather than wound, wound rather than maim, maim rather than kill.
Mm.
And truth be told, for those of us who have studied any type of martial arts, all right, Japanese martial arts and martial arts, Buddhism is very much intertwined in that, in that, in that, in that, in that philosophy. Zen Buddhism. Well, you said that Aikido, well, Aikido is more Shintoism. But the martial arts that most of us have studied from Asia, Buddhism is intertwined and is very teaching philosophy. That's why, as a rule, there's a, there's a, there's an ethos of restraint until you go no, no further. Your back is against the wall. Which is basically, I guess, like the opposite of stand your ground. I wanted to kind of bring it out, you know, just for context. I wanted to make these points about, you know, what we have here now. And we have a person that, you know, I'm going to say he was seeking inner peace or have you. Yet something was wrong. Something happened that led him to just snap. No, I'm being, there's something kind of awkward here. Alan Alexis used remote control to adjust the distance between his rifle and the cardboard cutout. Human silhouette suspended from an electric rail on the ceiling at Sharpshooters, a gun store in an industrial park in Northern Virginia. It was Saturday, and a 34-year-old former Navy reservist, bring earmuffs, was setting up right 16 chemicals at the indoor shooting range at the back of the store. He's using a rifle, a hide rifle, with target practice. He casually inquired about a shotgun display behind a glass cabinet on the wall, but opted instead for a pump-action Remington 870 shotgun and 24 shells, purchased for $419. Less than 48 hours later, and just 17 miles from the gun shop, Alexis stood on the fourth floor of a secure Navy administration building in Washington, D.C. Chunks had been sawed off the barrel and the butt of the Remington gun, which he had which had been etched with the words, "Better off this way." The ammunition was in his front pocket. Minutes later, a message cracked over the D.C. emergency service radio. "We got a report on the fourth floor, a male with a shotgun, multiple shots fired, four people down. The story of what happened inside Building 197 of the Navy Yard at first emerged only in practice as employees began sending messages to loved ones or finding ways to escape the base. Tim Gyrus, a 48-year-old Navy commander, saw the maintenance worker shot in the head right in front of him. He fled, climbing over a 20-foot spike fence." Wow, man, whoa, that was adrenaline there. "He was just standing there, maybe three feet away, having a conversation, and then we heard two more gunshots, and he went down," he told TV cameras outside. "And that's when I ran." And by that point, both civilian employees had been murdered by Alexis, a disturbed information technology contractor who stalked the office back, office block, in search of people to kill before he was shot by police. His victims were aged between 46 and 73 and was civilian staff working for the Navy, either directly or for contractors. Now, did any of you hear that Aaron Alexis talked his that it was not random? Did you hear that?
Yes, I did hear you did random.
Shit. I heard that this was... So, if we were to take this at face value, can I say he was disturbed, per se?
Oh, there's no doubt that he was disturbed.
Here I'm saying, when the profile, and I get to Shahid, yeah, Shahid in a minute, the profile that comes to mind for me, like a Gerald Lagner in Arizona, or John Holmes, in Colorado, they just randomly shot. They just shot randomly. But I have to ask myself the question: this person here has specific targets. People that he knew then, people that he knew, with whom he probably had a beef. Now, obviously, something's wrong. But in my view, that holds a little more level of accountability because he was more, I would say, of his right mind. And the other
You're talking about the shooter in the what is that?
In
D.C. Texas?
No, I'm talking about the one
know.
In D.C. The one in D.C.
I don't know if he was more of his right mind.
Well, the fact, but again, it wasn't random. It wasn't random. He didn't expect to shoot. I mean, what I heard, what they're saying that he targeted his victim. He had specific people he wanted to kill. Now,
okay.
if
wow.
that's the case, I think he does not get much of a pass, if you will. See, I will give others. All right? But I got Shahid. Yeah, Shahid. Assalamu alaikum, Shahid. How you feeling?
Wa alaikum assalam.
How you doing?
I'm good, alhamdulillah. How are you? Good. I'm
good.
How you been?
Good. We're at 8:05 now. Again, I just wanted to remind at the beginning of the show, I spoke about a Muslim brother I learned about at Juma yesterday, Abu Shahada, was shot by the police in South Carolina. So I urge everybody listening to look up The National. That's the name of the newspaper. They have a website. And try to find it. I want to pursue the situation. I don't know enough about it. But according to the imam who gave the lecture on Park Place yesterday, the khutbah, the sermon, there was some big problems with he and his mother over his experience in Islam. And she called the authorities on him. Under the guise of he's acting strange. Next thing you know, he's either shot, wounded, or dead. So I just wanted to bring it up again. Hope that someone here can research that. And come
was he shot fatally?
I believe so. That's the sense I got. It was fatal. South Carolina, the city, when the brothers were leaving, the lecture, he's very busy, so he had a chance to talk too much. And I wanted to get more from him, but I know how to reach his. It's called Guide Us TV, out of Ohio. I want to talk to this man all about this.
And he had just recently taken shahada.
As far as I recall, he was a new revert to Islam. He was in orientation class. And, he's making a slot, changing his diet, and, South Carolina, pork. It was an odd thing, they eat pork. And whatever happened, I don't get the sense, listening to this imam, that he was hearing foolishness, something crazy, something reckless. I don't get that sense that, he was being taught some type of nonsense. It's something I think we should try to find out about. Also, let me remind you all that we are still working, moving forward. Some delays in the process. We are still committed to get this program working and moving. We are going to get food from the South, from our farmers. Hopefully by this spring and next summer. That's our goal. So again, we need your help. We need your support. We need your ideas. We cannot allow this to be just some great shows we had on Critical Discourse and not follow up. It's too serious. And I'm reminded by Dr. Rashad Ali of New Medina that there will be food shortages. Up to us, men, the brothers, to secure the future, to be Khalifa, okay? To be Khalifa in its broader sense. And, secure and lead and maintain so that our wives and our children and their children have a bright day in the future. Shahid.
Yes.
We spoke about Obama, the defunding of Obamacare, and we talked about this incident in Washington, D.C. with this man named Aaron Alexis shot and killed 12 people. He was killed by some military personnel.
You know, oh, go ahead. Go ahead, finish.
Of course, I finished my.
Well, let me say this. You know, there has been a string of these killings, you know, of that nature. You know, somebody getting a weapon, whether it's a handgun, a shotgun, or whatever, and going out taking out some people. There's a string of these killings over the past. Well, more frequently in the past, maybe 3-4 years. Some have killed people, that this man, 12 people. Some have killed dozens. Some have, you know, wounded others. Some have killed a fewer number than that. But the thing is, you know, I thought about when this incident happened with this, Alexis, I think is the name. I thought about it again, and I thought about it, when there was another incident. I don't know if it was in Colorado or Tucson, Arizona. But over the past, I've been thinking about these incidents, you know. I think it was it Newtown or something like that? Newtown or something in Connecticut?
Right, Newtown, right. Newtown, Connecticut.
Right.
Yes. Sandy.
And thing is, you know, I'm not coming from a religious perspective. We live in, and I'm coming from something the imam said right after 9/11. We live in the judgment, all right?
Mm.
And I'm not going to try to get into a whole lot of thing about gun control and all that, you know? Well, we live in the judgment. And I think a lot of what's going on here is a judgment on America. As a matter of fact, the Army Elijah Muhammad wrote an article called The Judgment. And what it is to, you know, we have a society that condones war, whether it's overt or covert,
mm-hmm.
and we sanction it, and you see whether it's, you know, Middle East or in Africa or so on. So we live with this, and I think this is like something coming home to us now. This is like a divine, I'm talking about judgment, it's a divine judgment coming home to America. I don't give a damn how much gun control they have. I don't think it's going to stop. You're going to have another incident in another 3 or 4 months.
Well, is this kind of thing going on?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You go ahead, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, and I think, you know, people will call for gun control and all that, but that's not the answer to the problem. To me, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm getting so anxious.
But the thing is, I don't think that, you know, the society has an answer to these things, because, you know, we could send drones over somebody's country when it's Yemen or Pakistan, or wipe out innocent people who are innocent also, women and children. But we always talk about innocent people like, you know, innocent people only in America. And that's a lot of BS.
Well,
we kill people, we kill innocent people. We put some dictator over somebody, overthrow a government, put a dictator over some people, innocent people get killed. So I don't go for this innocent stuff. Yeah, they're innocent because they didn't do anything, but neither did those people over in those other countries. So I have a problem with us how we approach things. All right.
Yes.
I have a big problem with that kind of thinking in this country. And another thing I want to say, you know, we could overthrow one man, refer to him as a dictator, or attempt to overthrow, whether it's Assad or Saddam or Gaddafi, but to get rid of one man, we allow or support people who would kill tens of thousands of people.
Right.
And I can't buy that thinking. All right?
So
I say this, I believe this is a divine judgment. That's my take on it.
Well, I tell you something. You know, you mentioned Arj Muhammad, but he also said one time that the judgment is the manifestation of defects. And I think we should look at that statement for a minute, because, you know, while we can point to this country and its aggression and its covert actions, when we talk about, you know, Africa, Asia, you know, overthrowing government, Chief Lumumba, definitely. But we have to recognize that in a lot of other countries, even we call Muslim countries, we have unwanted violence. We have sectarian violence. We have Shia versus, you know, Sunni. You know, Shia mosques, mashes being blown. You know, we have to recognize this also. You see? We're going to look at this also. And we have to recognize that at the end of the day, you have Allah, the Creator, and Shaitan. And Shaitan is the enemy of man. And if we don't understand this, we all subject to this. You know. So whereas on one hand we can say point to this from a very sexual standpoint, well, that's America, that's Russia, that's what have you, that's Iran, that's Iraq, that's Sudan. At the end of the day, there's an intertwining, and the world is getting smaller, if you will, in terms of communication and, you know, information. And we have challenges. We hear some horrible stories in so-called Muslim countries. Okay? We learn about carnage in India, a Hindu nation primarily, with the rapes of women and girls, and the deaths. You know? And I'm saying all that to say that the judgment is on all of us, really.
Oh, yes, you know? I agree,
so,
yes. Yeah.
I'm just saying, though, because we you know, Holy Quran tells us to look at those before you to see how they fell. It stands reason to me that whenever you look at a path of current history, not necessarily looking back 20, 30, 40, 100, 100, 200 years. Let us try to assess what.
Kwasi?
Yeah.
I think one of the issues I think that we should also look at is not like they're falling, but what is it that we can do so that the country doesn't fall? I mean, what is our activism and our participation in the country? I mean, you know, I know that, you know,
right.
Muslims are here in America praying, but what else can we do to stop the country from falling?
Well, let me tell you something. You know, and I want to get feedback for the 12 minutes left we have on this show. I know that in Islam, we are allowed to defend ourselves. We are allowed to retaliate as long as you don't exceed the limits and go overboard. Once the fighting stops, we stop. But I also know, that Islamically, I am allowed to Islamically, if someone does harm to me, I'm allowed to forgive that person. In fact, Allah says forgiveness is best. So I'm suggesting that perhaps sometimes, you may have to bite the bullet, so to speak, and not lash back. Obviously, if someone's harming your family, you're not going to sit back. You're going to deal with things, you know, at hand. You're going to take care of business, you know, as a stream major has to go. But I think one point that we sometimes miss is that we do have an aspect where we can be somewhat passive, if you will, for lack of a better term. You know, be somewhat, you know, step back a few notches. And it might just make when you an ally. You know, I was reading a story about, actually this is my son's namesake, King Chief Moshweshwe. He's fighting a battle with some other tribe. And he learned that this tribe had lost their way, starving. And they're fighting his people. He went and sent them food. Became his allies. And I kind of think sometimes we miss that aspect in our anger and our righteous indignation. And I'm suggesting that maybe perhaps we may have to sometimes make that concession. Now, I'd like to get Ahmed's reaction to that. I said a lot, and, you know, I don't know, what his take is on that. But I'd like to hear from you, Ahmed, first, as we start to wind down.
Well, assalamu alaikum again. I was listening. I don't have a problem with forgiving, but I think if we go back to what Shahid said, you know, Allah has established justice, and we cannot go all over the world and do things and not think there's going to be an effect here. And there is. I mean, let's face it. If you are a democratically elected leader in another country based on some secret just released White House tapes from the era of Nixon, they were against you because you could make your people prosperous and America could not be as prosperous. So
right.
They were going through South America destroying democratically elected leaders. I don't think their policies changed because look at the world today. They said nothing when Morsi was put out. So I'm saying to you, we have a lot of weight that we're carrying here because we don't want everybody. We don't believe in the expression, I mean America in general, that you should want for your brother what you want for yourself. We want it all for ourselves.
Well, I tell you something also, Osman, on that note, what people, I think, was often forgotten. The last election, in Egypt, they had elections, Hosni Mubarak, last time around was elected democratically. Re-elected democratically.
You don't really believe he is elected democratically, do you?
What'd you say?
You don't believe he was elected democratically, do you?
They had a vote. You know, but remember,
I would say he was elected. Mubarak was elected. Hosni Mubarak was elected democratically. That was some concocted kind of election.
Keep in mind, he became the president upon the death of the assassination of Saddam of Anwar Sadat, and Sadat succeeded upon the death of Nasser, who I think took over when he overthrew King Farouk. So obviously, in 1953, in fact, so obviously there was this
But my point is this. We don't care. If we don't like you, you could be the best of anything. We don't care if something happens to you. But if we like you, you can kill trillions. We don't care.
That's a foreign policy. And to borrow from former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, history is replete. Of these instances where if you do our bidding, you're all right. We don't care who you kill. Case in point, Saddam Hussein. As long as he was killing Kurds, fighting Iran, no problem.
That's right.
His time was up. We're tired of you. You're starting to get a little wise and think you run things. I'm going to remind you.
And this is going on over the years. I mean, whether it's Noriega or Saddam Hussein or any of the others.
Take a step out there, though, Brother Shahid, and I'm going to say that not disagreeing with you in any way, shape, or form, if we look at who the shapers are of foreign policy in this country, and I'm talking about racially and ethnically, mm-hmm. it's going to lead to one place, and for the most part, one group of people and one ideology.
Well,
we had a conversation on that recently, and we did name that as being the Zionist. We did say that. But I just mentioned this here, and that was you see that our Congress can't make decisions on some other policies that would actually aid and assist our people, but they were very willing to make a decision to go to war against Syria.
They're not going to war right now. No, there's that's just so much shell. Right, but again, I understand the context. But either way, there was a vote or an action. So decisions were made rather swiftly. All right, one being Obamacare, the other, the time being, military action in Syria. All right, so I think, I don't know if I really went on to your nuance. Saying about any type of maybe contradiction or difference. I think in both cases you had
but look at all the money that would have been spent on that.
Well,
they're divided.
I agree.
I'm
Chinese. Learn Chinese may come in handy.
Look, you know what? It's interesting that let's say this country. I think a lot of people are really blind. A lot of people are blind. I was looking at the China President Xi as he visit all these countries in the Caspian. I call them the stands. I heard they don't like to be called the stands. Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, and he's promoting the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And you met with the Mongolian president and so on. And he thought, here's something this man said is very important. He said to the people up there in those countries, let's bring back the Silk Route.
Now, you know that was trade.
The Silk Route. The trading routes that when they call it the Silk Route.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. He said this today. I heard this. As a matter of fact, it used to be off now called RT, Russian television, and it's back on now. I was so glad to see it back on. And he said this to them, and what is he saying to them? He said, look, we gotta push the trade, because that's what the Silk Routes were, the trading. From all the way from those Asian countries all the way to Europe, and products went into Europe also. So this is what he's saying. And also at the meeting at the Shanghai Corporation Organization Group, they had to observers like Afghanistan and Iran. And one of the commentators say that one of the commentators say, Turkey's pushing to get into the European Union and they're being, jerk around. I'm using my term, jerk around, so to speak. And maybe Turkey should turn to the Shanghai Corporation. So, when we are there talking about war, and Panetta, who was the former Secretary of Defense, saying, 60% of American forces going to be in Asia by, I think it was 2020. They're planning all this stuff, but the Chinese are coming in and already, they really have usurped, I use that term, American foreign policy, and they don't even see it.
Well, Shahid, brothers, listeners, callers, we're at that time. We have
all
to go.
Right.
One thing that William had impressed me a long time ago: stick to the time that you're going to post to the show. 2 hours, 2 hours. I gotta go. But we'll maybe discuss this next week. We don't have a guest, but we'll probably talk about it next week a lot, won't we? May our Lord grant us with peace, prosperity, and light of understanding, faith and life, and all He can provide. And even not become reflections or witnesses of any of the acts.
Thinking about the sunshine, I'm gonna close on the line. my girl who was lesbian.